Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do it well. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. This is the last show of Mouthful's 12th year. As of next Sunday, it will be Mouthful's 13th year. And starting a tradition that began with the very first show, I have invited my friend, my mentor, a man who is so good on the radio.
Blush, and blush, blush.
So honored that he's willing to come on my show. It is Steve Garner of KSRO's The Good Food Hour, the longest running food and wine show. I know it's at least Northern California. It's got to be California. Is it now the country?
In the non-communist world, yes, it is.
What a claim to fame. You were doing, when did the show start?
October 1987.
October 1987. Was John Ash your co-host from the beginning?
No, he actually started with Larry Cherone. Do you remember Larry Cherone?
My Cherone? No, wait. That's something different.
Larry Cherone's been at KCBS now for the past 12, 13 years. But he started the show. And it was weekdays that John did the show on Wednesdays with Larry. And then in 1990, they decided, you know, I think food show might be better on a Saturday. So,
oh, duh.
You know, well,
it takes a while.
It takes a while. We started in 1990.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it was, it's been great now, a long time going. They started doing little contests themselves, Larry and John, when the show began. And they didn't really do full-scale contests. They weren't judges. They would just come up with something. And people would send in a few recipes, and John would pick one he liked and send him a case of Fetzer Cabernet or something like that. You know, that was about it.
And so, speaking of contests, is it the 22nd or 23rd?
The 22nd annual
KSRO Good Food Hour cooking contest. The contest is coming up. The final competition is coming up next Saturday, November 1st, the first day of Dia de los Muertos. Oui. It's happening at G&G Market in Santa Rosa from 11 to 12. The finalists will come and present their final dishes to a panel of judges, which will not include me this year. I'm so sorry. But it focuses on peanuts and that very common result of peanuts, peanut butter, which disqualifies me for being a judge.
I know. And I somehow in the back of my mind when I asked you to judge once again and you said no, you really didn't care for that particular legume. I remember you telling me this years ago. We were having a discussion about peanuts.
And I like peanuts. Boiled peanuts, boiled salted peanuts, they're so good. But peanut butter, it wouldn't be fair to people for me to judge.
No, you would be prejudiced.
Because I think it's yucky. To use that very precise culinary
term. That's what your seven-year-old grandson would say.
I think it's yucky.
Well, we found other judges.
Good. Who's going to judge?
Actually, we're going to have, someone from the Press Democrat.
Who's
Heather Irwin.
Oh, okay.
As she loves peanut butter. And John.
Yes, she does. She has little kids.
She has little kids, too. And John Ash. And then John is bringing over an instructor from the CIA for a third judge.
Okay.
And I can't remember his name. But we thought, let's do something. And actually, this was suggested by a listener a few years ago who wrote us a lovely letter explaining why we should do peanuts and peanut butter. And we thought it would it'd be a very good idea.
You know, you can use peanut butter as an ingredient in many interesting things. Some Thai sauces will actually use ground peanuts, but some will do shortcuts with peanut butter. And I think those things are really quite good. I mean, I'm not 100% opposed. But if you take peanut butter, make it taste like peanut butter, and put it into a sweet spectrum, I really don't.
You check out.
Yeah, I check out. So, you know, traumatized as a child in many ways, and that was one of them. So, no, I think it's absolutely a great thing to do. Can you say anything about the types of recipes you've gotten so far?
We have gotten everything from, which is one of my faves, a peanut butter panna cotta with a caramel mousse. I know you're squirming, but to me, that sends me to the moon. Okay. I love that. Well, I love peanut butter, remember?
Right, yeah. Okay. And as you should if you're doing this kind
and
of
contest. And we had a good recipe for a peanut coconut stew.
Oh, that's very interesting. Really sure. Oh, sure. One of the great combinations in the world is coconut milk and peanuts. That's a fabulous flavor.
So we've gotten some good curry recipes, mm-hmm. some Thai noodle type recipes, mm-hmm. a couple peanut butter chocolate fudge. Well, I'm going to squirm again. Peanut butter fudge pies.
No, tell like you know absolutely. Yeah. Listeners want to know about this. In fact, they all may quit listening to Mouthful because they now know this about
that's
me.
Okay.
But there are other things to recommend.
We had a peanut butter cake, which mm-hmm. peanut butter frosting, which I mm-hmm. love. Peanut butter muffins. We had a Senegalese African soup.
I was
peanut
wondering
soup.
If you were getting any. Like, yes, the African peanut soup is really interesting. A lot of interesting uses of peanuts.
Yeah, so
in Africa.
And I wanted to let people know that the contest goes till Wednesday night at 5:30.
I mean, so you can either email, mail, or drive over and drop off
which people
your
have.
Peanut recipe at yeah. KSRO, and yeah. we'll give you know the deal on Mouthful. At the end of the hour, we will give all of the email address and contact information. We like to give the listeners time to go get the pen and
they've got 72 hours.
So, yeah, it's great. So this started in 87.
Yeah.
So do you actually have a list of what all the contests have been?
I do. This was so good for this aging brain that you gave me an assignment to come up and think back over all these years. And I was able to. Do you want
I want
me to read
to know
them?
I should say part of the reason that I've invited Steve here tonight is that it's the 22nd annual contest. I think that's interesting. And the fact that this contest has, first of all, it started and then it just grew and grew and grew. It draws a big crowd to G&G Market. I think it's great. It's a North Bay tradition. And
yes.
So I'm all about history, you know. I like that connection to the past. So I want you to tell us all of the things. And one of the things that I'm really curious about is when you started this contest, really, we were still known primarily as the Redwood Empire. And so over these years, you've seen this change. You've seen Sonoma County struggle to be discovered and then struggle not to be so discovered and to sort of redefine itself in a lot of ways, including that transition from Redwood Empire to wine country. So I'm curious about the arc of not just the themes, but of the entries that
yeah.
you've had.
Yeah, well, they've certainly gotten a lot more sophisticated.
Exactly.
In the past 10
yes,
years.
Yes, of course you would expect that.
And I brought some from 1987, 1989.
Good, great.
Just a and I love grandma recipes.
Yes.
And I kind of bemoan the fact that we're getting a little more chefy
yes,
recipes.
Yes, I'm with you all the way.
Instead of the grandma recipes. Mm-hmm. So the first one we did was 1987. It was fruitcake, our first one. And I love fruitcake. Now, are you going to tell me you hate fruitcake now, too?
I'm not going to say a word about fruitcake.
Okay.
I don't think you can use the word fruitcake and mean any one thing. I think there's a big variety.
No. Someone sent us this card. Did you ever see this card?
No. Let's see. It's a woman with really big eyes. Nut or fruitcake? You decide. It's a woman with really big eyes holding a present, and she has on a Santa Claus cap. And she is somebody that you would call a fruitcake.
And during the contest, someone else sent us this card, which I've kept for 20 years or so.
Time for the annual holiday question. Does fruitcake flush?
So some of our listeners were not thrilled with our contest.
Well, what is it? It's a winery or group of wineries in Healdsburg near the river that has their annual fruitcake toss.
I was very angry about this, and I editorialized about that.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, I editorialized. I thought it was a really lousy.
But they got rained out last year.
Yeah, and I was thrilled.
Okay.
I talked about that on there. And also, I slammed Cold Stone Creamery.
No, I don't know about this.
Yeah, well, for the last 3 years, they've had a donate your fruitcake to to Cold Stone Creamery, they take it, they dispose of it, and they give you $5 off one of their ice cream pies. And I thought that was the worst idea of the year.
This offends anyone who likes fruitcake.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't patronize them.
That was it.
I hope they're not one of your sponsors.
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I don't know who the sponsors are. You can say anything you want.
Okay. Well, that offended me. And also, may I add one more thing?
You bet.
I grew up eating fruitcake because my dad, most people that have listened to my show know I grew up in Kentucky.
Right.
And my dad was an eye doctor. And kind of a country eye doctor. And he performed free eye exams for all the monks from the Trappist monastery.
Oh, wow.
Kentucky.
Okay. It was nearby?
It was, yeah, about 100 miles from Louisville. Okay. But they would come drive into Louisville to get free eye exams.
Oh.
And the order was founded in 1848 outside of Louisville. And these were monks that came from Western France and established this Trappist order in Kentucky, of all places. Maybe they knew there was bourbon being, I don't know exactly what. And to support themselves, well, you know all the orders do some type of food-related.
Sure.
So they make their own cheese, they smoke their own hams, they make bourbon fudge, and they make these fruitcakes. So in exchange for the eye exams, they couldn't pay my dad. Mm-hmm. We got all this great food when I was a kid. So from the time I was 4, 5, 6 years old, I was eating bourbon fudge, cheese, country ham, and this fantastic fruitcake that was made with Jim Beam. It's still made with Jim Beam. And every year I have one of the monks on the show to promote fruit. I've done this every year.
How have I missed this?
We have it every holiday season around November to let people know, time to order your fruitcake.
You do a phone interview.
Yeah, a phone with one of the brothers, Brother Raphael or Brother Simon or one of
the... So tell me about their cheese.
It's a smoked cheese. They do a smoked... kind of like a Monterey Jack type cheese that they've done for about 40 or 50 years. It's very mild. It comes in a big wheel. And they also do their own country hams. They cure their own country hams.
And they'll ship it.
They'll ship it,
Wow, this is fabulous.
And it's the Gethsemane order of the Trappist monks. And it's called Trappist Kentucky. And you can Google them. They're on the internet. So anyway, that kind of inspired me to do a fruitcake recipe back in 87. So I just brought some of these because they were so sweet and endearing. Some of the things that... Do you mind if I...
No,
if
I want you to, actually.
Here's one. Dear Steve and John, this cake's an excellent alternative to the standard fruitcake nightmare. The texture and serving ability is very similar, but this is a fruitcake all of my family and friends look forward to. It is the one that won't be around next year. I thought that was pretty
Well,
fun.
Let's see what... Wait, let's see what's in it. What makes it different?
I don't have the rest. I just have...
Oh, you just have
this
a note?
Was from Lower Lake, California.
Okay.
This one was... This one from Bertie Snyder, and hers is her famous gumdrop fruitcake. Her secret recipe is, white raisins and gumdrops. And I thought that was kind of unusual for a fruitcake. This is a very long one. I can kind of paraphrase this, but look, people wrote like hand wrote great stories about, this one came from Manitoba, Canada, this fruitcake recipe. My grandpa was the owner of a music shop and a barber shop. This meant that he wasn't home very often, so my grandmother was in sewing and knitting groups in Canada, and she would have a lot of time to make hermits. You know what hermits are? The famous cookies, little raisin-type cookies. Now, you probably don't like those. Church cakes, double cookies with lemon fillings, and fruit cakes. And so here's the story. She would always make fruit cakes for my sister and I would hide my fruit cake in my closet so my sister wouldn't get to it. And then I would forget about it. And then it came time for spring cleaning. The fruitcake would reappear, much to our amazement. By then, it was a little hard and sometimes even a little fuzzy. And this is in parenthesis. My mom would want to throw the fruitcake out, but I would want to save it. So after a little give and take, I would trim off a little piece and eat it over the next few weeks. Many friends and family don't like fruitcake, but I love fruitcake and miss my grandma's fruitcake recipe. So
that's so sweet.
Fruitcake inspired. Here's one from my aunt. Do you mind? Tell me when to shut up, okay?
Don't shut up. Just
okay.
No,
dear Steve and John, I did want to send you my Aunt Bertie's fruitcake. It was always a favorite of anyone who ever ate it. She made numerous cakes every fall in her Pawnee, Oklahoma kitchen. Aunt Bertie never drank, but she soaked her cakes in lots of different liquor that she found in Grandpa's closet. She used any liquor that her brother, who owned a liquor store, gave her. She always says it really didn't matter, it'd make any difference. Aunt Bertie did die a few years ago. We miss her so much, and also her wonderful fruitcake. We always think fondly of her when we hear the word fruitcake. So this it jogged people's memories.
You know, this is... I think you're, like, writing your first book here on the
air. Dear Stephen John, as a kid growing up in Sebastopol many years ago, my dad was a mailman, walking from house to house in town for many years. Quite a few of his customers gave him treats at Christmas time. One woman, I don't remember her name, made the same fruitcake as a gift to him every year, and it was delicious, filled, as I recall, with dates, Brazil nuts, and little or no fruit. We all looked forward to some of these holiday gifts, and when Dad came home, we'd ask, "Did you get the fruitcake yet?" I wish I had that recipe. Dad passed away, and likely he probably could recall her address better than her name. I think others gave him cakes, but they were filled with the fruits, which seemed too sweet for me. It's been years since I looked for this recipe, and I couldn't find one. There were other residents who gave the same gift year after year. As a matter of fact, one lady always gave him a box of See's candy from her dog, Shotzi. Hope you like my recipe. Hey, that stream of consciousness. These people just write them.
Fruitcake with dates and Brazil nuts. That sounds really good.
The only thing I liked as much as the fruitcake was another family gave my dad homemade divinity.
My mother made divinity.
Okay. Tell me when to stop.
No, I don't want you to stop. Okay. I want you to keep going. This is fascinating.
The following is the original receipt. For my dad's fruitcake. He made it every year while I was growing up and was the only fruitcake I would eat. I loved it except for the year he mistakenly bought a dried sugared fruit mixture containing grapefruit. That was terrible. It ruined the batch. I also remember Dad storing the fruitcake in airtight tins with flour sack dish towels soaked in brandy between the individual cakes. Dad worked as a bakery driver for Manning's Restaurants in San Francisco. He was given the receipt and taught how to make the fruitcake by one of the bakers. I was told that throughout the years he changed the original receipt slightly. Unfortunately, I don't have a copy of the original, so I don't know what was changed. Sorry. Aren't these wonderful?
Now, people learned about this simply by listening to the radio.
Yeah.
Amazing. I mean, just the fact that the radio... I mean, that's one of the things that it underscores to me, is that the radio is such an intimate medium that... It encourages listeners to tell such intimate stories. I love that.
Dear John and Steve, when I was a kid growing up on Christmas, my sister and I always put a glass of milk and a piece of fruitcake. Did you do this, Michelle?
Glass of milk and...
Glossade chestnuts or something?
No, it was a cookie. Oh. I think it was probably oatmeal raisin cookies. Oh.
We put milk and fruitcake at the fireplace for Santa. We knew he would be hungry, and it seemed that everything had to be put together in those days. My mom made the recipe from a 1940 sunset recipe that we still have, and in the morning the glass and the plate would be empty. And then so here's my mom's fruitcake recipe from Sunset Magazine, 1941. Here's a fruitcake recipe we thoroughly enjoy. No story there. I'll move on to something else. So just fruitcake. I've lived in California since 1969, but grew up in Minnesota. And by the way, fruitcakes are mandatory if you're German.
Oh, okay.
I figured she probably stomped her when she was typing this. I love most of them, but here's one I've been tweaking for years. And no matter what combination of fruits and or nuts, it always turns out great. And even those weird people who don't like fruitcake love this.
What makes it different? Can you tell?
Raw carrots, raisins, sugar, water, nutmeg, butter, molasses.
Well, and carrots.
Yeah. Glazed pineapple. I've also used mixed glazed fruit, but my friends prefer the pineapple. So that was good. Here's a lemon fruitcake that's wonderful, very lemony. Let's see. Oh, persimmon fruitcake.
Persimmon cake is so good.
Yeah, and she uses macadamia nuts.
Sort of Hawaiian.
Wild. Yeah. Isn't that cool? Yeah. I don't remember that one. This is not an original recipe. It's from a 1961 Sunset cookbook of the best of kitchen cabinet recipes. I think the section of the magazine where readers sent in recipes by that name. Anyway, the book was a wedding gift to me, and when it fell apart, I saved this recipe. The 61 Sunset fruitcake recipe. She says, "I've never liked fruitcake, but this cake's absolutely delicious. Each Christmas, I give these cakes as gifts to family and friends. Time's gone by, and now I'm the only one left who enjoys fruitcake.
You are listening to What Else Would It Be? Mouthful on KRCB. We'll be right back. It's Michelle Jordan. It is Mouthful here on KRCB. Thanks for sticking with us. You know, we don't get a lot of phone calls here on Mouthful unless I set out and say, okay, this is going to be a phone-in show. We've got a tradition going of letting our guests talk. But if you want to call in, and we did get a call earlier and we weren't able to take it, if you want to call back, we've got Mouthful's producer, Kainoa Raymond, standing by. He will answer the call and put you on the air. That number is 584-2020. In the meantime, it is my annual guest, Steve Garner. You're just like the perfect human, Steve. You are the perfect host on the radio. You have just the most delightful, infectious enthusiasm about everything I've ever seen you do. And I love what you talk about. Actually, I was wrong about the number you're supposed to call in. If you want to talk on the air on Mouthful, it's 588-0637. 588-0637. But no,
thank you.
You're like a little kid. You're so enthusiastic. And I think that you have a talent that every radio show host should have, and that's you make your guests sound like the most interesting person you could talk to. And I know that sometimes that's because they are, like when I'm on your show. And I know that's sometimes really a challenge. Some guests, you have to like stand on their chest and pull the words out with pliers, and you always make it seem effortless.
So you just have to look for the opening.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to keep throwing the darts until one sticks.
Six.
And then you can't shut them up. But yeah. But sometimes that'll take 40 minutes.
I know. You're really good. I think you're way better at it. Because I see, it's like, whoa, everything's bouncing off them, and I have 55 minutes to go, and I can panic. But I try not to shoot. Anyway, second year.
Cranberries, 1988.
Oh, Cranberries. You did Cranberries in 1988?
We did.
Visionaries.
We did. Well, I don't know about that.
What kind of things did you get? Because, you get.
These were some pretty unusual ones. Listen to this. Cranberry, Bloody Mary, Lamb, Daub.
That's interesting.
With cranberry juice, cocktail concentrate, rum, Worcestershire sauce, lime juice, Bloody Mary mix, crushed juniper berries,
ooh,
pumpkin pie spice, bouillon cubes, peanut oil, sweetened dried cranberries, a cup of Granny Smith, and the secret ingredient, 2 tablespoons of kitchen bouquet.
Wow, I now have whiplash.
Wasn't that great?
That's astonishing.
Uh-huh. And then this other one was kind of interesting, too. This was a, what did you call this? Oh, cranberry nut pie. Actually, that was quite good. And then cranberry salsa.
Cranberry salsa.
Which was good.
Hey, I was doing cranberry salsa back in 88. Did they probably steal my recipe?
I'm sure they did. Let's see. Do you remember what was in yours?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This had jalapeno peppers.
Yep.
Cranberries.
Yep.
Yellow bell peppers.
Nope.
Cilantro.
Yep.
Green onion, lime juice, sugar, and kosher salt.
It's very close to my
recipe. I'm sure it was.
Just the yellow. They added the yellow bell peppers.
And cranberry crunch salad and cranberry onion confit.
That's me, too.
Was that you?
Well, this was
Michelle's recipes. That was pretty cool.
So let's talk about...
Well, I got to show you this. Do you remember this picture of you?
No.
In 1993?
Oh, my gosh,
when
no.
you judged our pot roast contest? Look at you. Look at how short your hair was back then.
Oh, that's an okay picture. But, yeah, that's back when I was doing the... French Bob beating my hair into submission. Look how young Peter Reinhardt looks.
I know.
Like, goodness.
We all do. You look the same as you did back 15 years ago. But, you know, let me tell you, this is very funny. And I haven't looked at these recipes
and
in 15
frugal
years.
Frugal Gourmet.
On the back.
Is he still in jail?
Oh, that was Jeff, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think he's in jail.
Jeff, he was a little pervo, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's a little
slightly perved. I'm sorry, Jeff. Did you interview him? Did you have him on your show?
No.
Oh. Gave me the creeps.
I met him at some book event in Philadelphia. I was like,
but, you know,
oh.
He's very ill. He was in a wheelchair.
I'm sorry.
Very, very sad.
But he
sad.
Was, like, really a
sad story.
Really.
So I'm looking at the winners of our, this was our New Age Pot Roast.
New Age
Yeah,
pot
that's
roast.
What we billed it as. We wanted pot roast to go to, like, the 21st century back then. In
and that was, that's the one we're judging in this picture.
Yeah. So here were the winners. Listen to this. These were very clever, what people came up with. Second place was Pueblo Indigena pot roast. Third place was my venison and pomegranate pot roast. Fourth place, buffalo pot roast with green salsa. And fifth place, and I have to read you this one. Talk about prophetic. Fifth place in 1993, celebrate the end of the Bush administration pot roast.
Wow.
Huh?
Wow.
And it goes on. And this was a young woman named Simon Corwin from Petaluma. And she...
Simon?
Simon is her name. Uh-huh. And it says, Simon was the one contestant to really stick to the New Age approach. To imbue her dish with some New Age vibrations, she put a small pyramid and crystal...
I knew it was going to be
a pyramid. Do you
remember
this? Over her pot roast. And she said, that's about as New Age as I can get. And I would much rather be New Age than old age. So she was quite clever. But isn't that the end of the Bush administration?
The end of the Bush.
Pot roast.
Look
that's
at
it.
That. Oh, huh? God. What archives you have.
And John Asher says, it's great that you save all this stuff.
It is. It's fabulous you save all this stuff. It's astrology.
Can I read
Cancers
you?
Don't throw things
Can
out.
I read you? I'm going to skip ahead here to 19.
Well, just tell us the list, though. I want to know what each
right.
year was.
Okay. 1989 was persimmons. 1990 was holiday gift foods. We wanted people to send us. Uh-huh. A lot of people sent us recipes for
flavored
jams, jellies,
vinegars,
chutneys, mm-hmm. fudge. And so we'd give them cooked. And we did this. You know, it was John and me one week going, hey, why don't we have a contest? It was like Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland. Let's do a contest next week. Okay, kids, come on. Send us your best. And this is how we did it. This kind of the seat of the
be.
Pants.
And that's how it should. That's how the best things
but
are done.
I can't believe some of the prizes we used to give away. It was some pretty good. There, the 1991 was our low-fat or fat-free salad dressing contest. And I have this, if I can find it. John wrote letters to all the finalists. John, and it was said, hi, I'm John Ash, and I'm blah, blah, blah. And he said, I'm going to send you a case of Fetzer Cabernet Sauvignon. And he hasn't seen these letters, and neither have I until I started looking through all the archives today. Each of the five finalists got a case of Fetzer Cabernet back in 91. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then 92 was chili. 93, the New
Age.
I
was there for chili.
Yeah.
Now, chili, that was John Gates, who was at the time the manager and bartender. I think this was 91, unless you did chili another year.
I did chili another year.
Okay.
You're thinking John Gaines.
Year. John Gaines.
Right, that's further. We did chili twice.
Because he hand wrote a 7-page...
Oh, I have it. Oh, manifesto.
Yes,
it was
a manifesto,
chili manifesto
on chili, yes. Oh, yeah. So you did chili twice.
Twice.
Okay.
So the back when 92 was chili, and then pot roast was 93. 94 was chocolate chip cookies. Our chocolate chips. Actually, we wanted chocolate chips to go in a whole new direction, and that was very exciting. Then we did coffee, cooking with
mm-hmm.
coffee.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yep.
At Higher Grounds? Remember Higher Grounds Coffee? Right
yeah.
next to Last Record Store?
Right.
Yeah, now
right.
it's the Govinda.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Were you there for that one?
I don't think I was
you
for that one. I think
cooking
it was out
coffee.
Of town. I think it was out of town.
That was cooking with coffee. That was great. Someone did a Jack Daniel's bread pudding cake that was
okay.
really sensational.
That'll work.
With ground coffee something in it. And then 96 was ginger, cooking with
mm-hmm.
ginger. Were you there for that
I
one?
Think I was.
97 was chili peppers. Chili peppers.
Yes, I was definitely there for that.
98 was cheese appetizers. 99 was mushrooms. 2000 was rice. 2001 was garlic.
I'm
with,
sure I was
Les
there.
Blank.
Les Blank,
uh-huh.
yes, of course.
2002 was almonds, cooking with almonds. And I found this charming letter that one of our listeners sent us this recipe. And this old-style script, European-style script, mm-hmm. it says, Dearest, dear Nonna the recipe is called, well, here she says, "Dear Stephen John, this torta was handed down to my mother from her grandmother that lived in Torre del Lago Puccini, Italy. My mother at that time was 11 years old. It took grandmother several days to make this torta. When we arrived in the United States, Mama discovered frozen puff pastry and almond paste in the can. America, wow." And so here's her handwritten recipe for the torta. That was using the almond paste.
This is just fabulous.
America, wow. So that was 2002. And then 2003, we kind of went out there. I don't know. Maybe our meds were wrong or something, but we did tofu. Were you there for tofu?
Oh, I seriously doubt it.
Really? Oh,
I
you don't
seriously
like tofu
doubt
either?
It.
You don't like tofu?
You know, I have a problem with tofu. It's a texture problem.
Here was a great letter. "Dear Stephen John, I enclose the Shimmons Ridge tofu salad recipe that was created in the early 1970s outside of Willits, California. Our family and friends were living in the hills, eating healthy food, growing vegetable gardens, and eating a lot of tofu. We considered it the miracle food and were always trying to come up with something that we liked and also something that we could get our husbands and children to eat. Sautéed slabs of tofu just wouldn't do. This recipe is the one that stuck through the years. Some things have changed, though. We really did use traditional mayonnaise because aioli spread and veginase had not been developed yet. The consistency should be like egg salad or tuna salad, as thick or thin as one likes. The soy sauce and spices are the key. All of the families that lived on Shimmons Ridge, northeast of Willits, have since moved into town or moved on, but they still make this tofu salad."
It's really quite an astonishing historical and cultural
Shimmons
record.
Look at this. Shimmons Ridge tofu salad, circa 1973.
What are some of the ingredients?
I haven't looked at this in 4 years. Tofu firm, mayonnaise type dressing like veginase. I don't know what veginase is.
I use best foods. What can I say?
Low fat cottage cheese, soy sauce or shoyu, cumin, curry powder, turmeric, cardamom, black pepper to taste, chopped celery, grated carrot, chopped fine parsley, chopped green onions, and toasted sunflower seeds. Probably pretty good, as I recall. Here's a few more tofu recipes. You want to hear a few more?
She's
telling me to move on.
No, we can do more tofu. We can do more tofu.
Just a pesto lasagna with tofu. How about that? No, she's making a face. With Alfredo sauce. We'll pass on that one. Cream of carrots soup with tofu.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And here's one. This should be entered in the contest this year. Chocolate peanut butter tofu pie.
There you go.
Huh? I should call this person and have them re-enter. Here's minced pork stuffed tofu with spicy hot and sour sauce.
You have to say that again.
Minced pork stuffed tofu with spicy hot and sour sauce.
So you're stuffing tofu with minced pork?
Well, you place the loin chop, garlic cloves, salt, and scallions in a food processor, and they shape it into meatballs.
Well, now that's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah, and it was good recipes, I recall. It was in the finals. And here's a person who said, "I manage the kitchen at the Bishop's Ranch, a retreat center in Sonoma County. And we recently hosted a group from Dean Ornish's Preventive Medicine Research Institute." You're making a face again.
I'm just smiling.
"The group consisted of 30 men with prostate cancer."
Oh, gosh.
Even your producer looked up at that. "They were following a vegan diet with no added fats, and I came up with the following mock egg salad for them, and they really loved it. And it had tofu, lemon zest, Dijon, some red onion, mayonnaise, and a soya mayonnaise because it has no oil in it. That's why they use that. Basil, capers, and a splash of Bragg's, which is that amino acid sauce. So yeah. There was one. I didn't remember that. Isn't that it? Oh, let's see. I sure got there from Jaffe's restaurant. There's more, but... And this is wonderful that you're having me go through this and read this because it's been years since I've looked at these things. Okay, there's
the
one.
The fact that you could find them blows my mind.
Well,
I am extremely impressed.
Okay, so that's enough tofu. Okay.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
And then, one, I think it must have been the chili peppers. But remember Salvador's?
Ceja. Salvador Seja.
Salvador Sosa. He won 2 years in a row.
That's right.
When
he did.
I was judging. So what was So he won one in Chili's.
He did in the salsa recipe. He
had have we not gotten there yet?
Well, I didn't bring every. I mean, I would have had to have.
But
a
I mean, just
load.
No, the list. What year would that have been?
He won for the New Age Pot Roast.
Oh, okay.
Back in 93. It was a con carne pot. I bet I have that. Wait, I have it here. I think this is Salvador's recipe here.
Because Salvador is, I often think of Salvador. He is just
Here it is. Salvador's smoky tomatillo sauce.
Yes, I put that in one of my cook. That in California Home Cooking.
Right.
That is one of those flavors I will never forget. I can, as soon as we conjure it up, I can taste it. I mean, as soon as we say it, I can taste it.
Now, see, I know you weren't there for the chocolate contest.
No, I was not.
You couldn't have been a judge for that because you just told me you don't care for chocolate.
Yeah, I'm not.
Do your listeners know that you don't like chocolate?
Yeah, I'm not a chocoholic.
And look what won. Chocolate cornbread. By who? Salvador Seja. Won that, too.
And didn't he? And then he won the. Did he win the salsa?
Yeah, he did. He won three contests.
Do you remember what he won for the salsa contest?
What prize?
No, what the salsa was.
I didn't bring it.
Because that was really good.
It was a great salsa.
Yeah.
So he won for chocolate cornbread.
He's. You know, I probably would have loved it, because I bet it was spicy.
It was spicy.
Yeah.
It was spicy. It had chocolate chips and butter, and like chopped habanero.
Oh yeah, it would be fabulous.
And a little baking soda, sugar, salt, olive oil, buttermilk, polenta. And flour.
We're going to talk about polenta before the show's over.
So there was another one.
So so we're up to 2003. That was tofu, right?
Tofu. Oh, did I stop right there?
Yeah, you stopped. So I want to hear what I want to get.
2004 was Beyond Potato Salad. Didn't you do that one?
No, I was actually out of the country.
Oh, we had a wonderful new
potato. I would have loved to have been there.
It was great. It was a new potato and green bean salad. It was dynamite.
I've met very few potato salads I haven't loved.
And then in 2005, that was the original bowl of chili, our second chili contest.
Okay, and that's
Mr.
when
Gaines
won.
John the Gaines. Seven-page manifesto guy.
Yes.
I felt almost like I should maybe call the FBI when I received this. It was a little scary.
Yeah.
It wasn't suggestions. These were not guidelines.
This is what you must do.
And I got to tell you, you were right, because I called
you. Asked
you
me.
And I
said, no, he's
hey,
the real
do you
deal.
Know anybody that's got like a dynamite chili recipe? And you said, I've got a guy.
You got to talk to John Gaines.
And you were right on the money.
And he won.
He was a true master.
I think he won $500.
He did win $500. And he toasted all his chili blends. Very methodical. And his chili was sensational.
Yeah, he is a great cook, a great, if rather, exuberant writer.
Isn't he a good pool player, too?
I actually don't know.
I don't know. I just made that up.
Oh, I don't think so. I used to play pool at the bar he ran, and I don't remember him ever playing.
And then 2006 was stuffing.
I was there for
that. The stuffing contest. And then, of course, last year, tamales. That sent you over the
edge. You should have just done tamales 2 years in a row.
I know. You went
tamales crazy at that one. Yeah, we had the woman who won.
Margarita Duran.
We had her on
Mouthful. Didn't
you? I think like the next week or two weeks later. Yeah. And I look at her recipes. I did a big story on her. And just I follow her around like a little puppy dog.
Wasn't
her
she
tamales
sensational?
Are amazing.
Yeah, that was a fantastic contest.
Yeah.
I loved the Salvadorian taco. Tamales were
and
terrific.
And I go there. I go to the restaurant.
You
sometimes.
Do.
It's over on, what is it, South E or is it Brookwood?
South E.
Yeah, South E, uh-huh. Right there in the little strip mall.
Yeah.
Yeah, go there sometimes.
Yeah. And then here we are, 2008, peanuts and or peanut butter.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah. Well, I'm really curious about the Senegalese recipes, and I'm curious to see if you get any other African recipes.
I hope we do.
Yeah, I hope
people
do
will
too.
Really push the envelope. Because when you start thinking about peanuts and peanut butter, they're so versatile. They really can go.
Yeah, it's a great source of protein.
It is.
And it's, it doesn't have to be limited to what set me off, which was peanut butter and jelly. I really hated it when I was a little kid. And I was ostracized in school because I wouldn't eat it. And I would get in trouble because I wouldn't eat it. And just the smell of it,
I'm hoping, secretly, that someone sends us the Fool's Gold loaf recipe.
And
do you know what
that.
The Fool's Gold loaf? That was Elvis's favorite sandwich.
Oh, is that the one with bananas and bacon?
No, no bananas. But this is the one where he would call the Colorado Mining Company, which is in Denver, from Memphis, and he'd say, I want a Fool's Gold for serve 100. And this is, they would make these sandwiches and they would deliver them to Stapleton Airport with a case of champagne. And all his bodyguards would would eat the sandwich. Do you know about this?
No.
It's a loaf of French bread.
That's I have an Elvis cookbook, too.
Oh, well, it might be in there.
I have to look it up.
You toast a whole loaf of French bread until it's crunchy with butter on the outside. Slice
oh,
it open.
Oh, butter on the outside?
On the outside.
Okay.
Slice it open. Dig out all the stuffing. One jar of peanut butter. One jar of Smucker's grape jelly. 1 pound of bacon that has been cooked crisp.
Crisp. Got to be
crisp. Crisp.
Right on Elvis.
Absolutely. And that's it.
And you smush it together.
You smush it together, and that will serve 8 to 10 or one Elvis. That's pretty much.
That's maybe great. Somebody will send that
it's
in.
Called the Fool's Gold Loaf. And he would get these. You know, when he'd get the hankering at midnight or so, he'd call. They would meet him. They would bring as many of these sandwiches.
How long
sandwiches
would it take to get them?
To get from Memphis to Denver? Oh, he'd call. Well, it's only about an hour flight from Memphis to Denver.
Okay.
So he'd call, and they knew if Elvis called, they would have somebody there to deliver them to Stapleton Airport. And he did that for years. That was his go-to sandwich, besides the peanut butter banana sandwich, which he could whip
butter,
up by himself.
Peanut butter, banana, and bacon. Yeah, you can do, yeah.
But that was the big loaf. The Fool's Gold Loaf was what it was called. I digress. I'm sorry.
No, you're not digressing at all. That's fabulous. But I wanted to go back to we're talking about the African possibilities, only because I can't resist telling you about the Sebastopol Farmers Market and what was at the Sebastopol Farmers Market today, because it was special, jaw-dropping, remarkable, wonderful, and rare. And you know Princess Aisha, who sells shea butter, has been on she was on Mouthful, I think, 2 years ago. And she's had this habit for the last several months. You know, she also sells drums that she brings here from Ghana. She goes to Ghana in November, comes back in January, and she always brings drums. And I've noticed the last several months, she has friends who stop by the market at the end, you know, towards the end of the market. She has her friend Sarah, who I think is also from Ghana, and she has a couple of men whose names I don't know, and they'll just start playing drums, and she has a couple of handheld instruments, and she'll start to move a little bit, not really dance all the way, but you can tell from the way she moves that she's a dancer. And so she's been dancing with a couple of women, teaching a couple of women in Sebastopol, and started telling me a few weeks ago that she was going to dance today. So I mentioned it in my column, and waited to get to the market until a little late because I figured she would not be dancing really early, and when I got there she was already dancing. She made costumes for everyone who was dancing. She's a remarkable seamstress. Most of the clothes she wears except for the jeans, but she has these beautiful African fabrics, and she makes tops, tunics, sometimes two or three that are layered. She makes them that fit a woman's body really beautifully in a beautiful way, but are not real fancy. Well, she had made these costumes. A great amount of skin is exposed in the costumes for Aisha and her friend Sarah. Complete midriff exposure. Mm-hmm. For one of the American women, complete midriff and back exposure. And another of the Americans, she covered up with. She obviously didn't want so much of her body showing. And then there were, gosh, four or five drummers. Several in the back and then one out front doing a big stand-up. And he was African. And they danced with no implements, and then sometimes they had implement sticks. And if you looked just at the dancing, you left this country. You went to another part of the world, and you saw how other people lived. You saw how other people, you saw what the relationship of other people was to their bodies and the joy that is expressed both in their posture and the movement of their bodies and the amount of energy that they not just muster in themselves but convey through the energy of their dancing and their face and the joy that is coming out the way they move you. It's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. Just astonishing. And when I got there, there must have been 60, 70, 100 people sitting on the concrete patio, the town square there, just watching for a really long time. And Aisha just got more and more and more energy. And then they sang and then they danced some more. It was just one of the most beautiful things I've seen in my life.
But no peanuts.
No peanuts, but she is a fabulous cook.
I bet she...
She is a fabulous cook.
Should tell her about the recipe contest.
She brings traditional ingredients from Ghana whenever she goes. And there's something that has a very unusual name, something like Lala or Yuyu. You know, it's a name that we would think of as a playful name, but it's yam, pounded yam powder that has been made to be really soft but yet holds its shape, and then a stew goes over that, and it's one of the staples. Oh, it is so good.
Well, sweet potato, yam, peanuts.
Yeah. This isn't sweet potato. This is the big 100-pound, the true yam that is used for powder. And that you know, it's supposed to have all kinds of like magical nutritional qualities. It's supposed to be very good for women, but it's not something you would ever bake in the oven and then put butter and syrup on. You know, it's something that is either cooked in this way that Aisha does it and then brings it over. I mean, she doesn't bring the raw fruit, the raw, you can't. And then if you go somewhere and you buy yam powder, or if you go, lately I've become very, very fond of yam noodles. You get yam noodles in places like Asia Mart. Any of the Asian markets in the refrigerated sections will have yam noodles, and I absolutely love them. One of my favorite breakfasts, if I eat breakfast, is just some nice miso, so some nice red miso, and some yam noodles and a little bit of green onion. They're really, really good for you. They're really nutritious. They're really low in calories, and they just fill you with good feeling. So anyway, that was a really magical thing that happened at the Sebastopol Farmers Market today. The costumes, the colorful, was just stunning. So hopefully we will have more of that. But
do you want to know how to end the contest?
I was going to say, we still have 10 minutes to talk about. We still
I wasn't
10
looking
minutes.
At the clock.
Oh, we still have 10.
I wanted to ask
let's
you.
Let's go back to the contest.
But I have to ask you about you and boiled peanuts. Now, You said you like boiled peanuts. Where did you have boiled peanuts?
At various Aloha festivals.
The Hawaiians eat
boiled
peanuts.
Yes, there's a vendor, and we should get a microphone on Kainoa. Kainoa was born. How old were you when you left Kauai? Three? One?
Younger, one.
One, okay. Okay, so Kainoa was born in Kauai, goes back every year, and he's nodding his head that they eat boiled peanuts. Do they grow peanuts in Hawaii? Okay, yeah, no, I haven't seen any either. But there's a vendor that does a lot of dried snacks, a lot of just Hawaiian-style snacks at various Aloha festivals. And there was the Napa Valley Aloha Festival, I think, last month. Really sweet, low-key. Napa wasn't very hot. Beautiful dancing, just fabulous dancing. And I always get a little sack of boiled peanuts. They're salted. They're tender.
Was that the first time you'd had them? Was
no, I had them... Pleasanton, down in Pleasanton at the Pleasanton Fairgrounds, there's two hula festivals a year. There's the one around May Day, and I went to that, and that's the first place I had them. And now there's another one happening this coming weekend, October 31st, and the first and second is Ya'oi Ekala, which is the Kumu Hula Festival, and there is just amazing, amazing hula dancing.
See, I didn't know there was a history of Hawaiians eating boiled peanuts.
Yeah.
I thought it was strictly a regional southern delicacy.
No, you just definitely see it in Hawaii. And I'm teaching a class on Hawaiian cooking for Santa Rosa Junior College next year, May 2nd and 3rd. We are doing a full weekend-long class. We will be going all through traditional Hawaiian foods. We'll be fixing ourselves breakfast and lunch the first day, but we'll also be preparing foods for our big luau the next day. We're going to have a lei-making workshop. We're going to have a little lesson in playing the ukulele. We're going to have hula dancers. So I will be investigating all these various aspects.
And boiled peanuts?
Maybe. If I can get raw peanuts. Every now and then I see raw peanuts.
Yeah, you don't.
Sale.
It's
so if
hard
I can
to
get
find.
Raw peanuts, we will do boiled peanuts.
Do you get the Lee Brothers boiled peanut catalog?
I do not, but I have a feeling I might.
Do you know about the Lee Brothers boiled peanut catalog?
I do not.
From South Carolina? Do you know the Lee Brothers?
It's vaguely familiar.
These wild brothers. They wrote the Lee Brothers cookbook that won the best cookbook of the year.
Okay, yes, I do know.
So they were on the show a few years back.
Yes.
And they've devoted their lives to turning people on to boiled peanuts. which is a southern delicacy. And if you go throughout
that's
the south,
always associated it,
they're along the roadside year round, people boiling peanuts in huge cauldrons. And they're a great snack. Some people don't like them. They like roasted peanuts, but I love
boiled peanuts.
And you can buy them from the catalog. They're very inexpensive, but the shipping.
It's the shipping.
Forget it. If five pounds of peanuts you can get for $10, but it's $28 to ship.
Well, it's like the bacon and ham and hog jowls I get from Virginia. You know, the bacon costs $3 and the shipping's $20.
Like the Grateful Palate, the bacon catalog?
Yeah, well, this bacon is way cheaper than the bacon catalog.
Oh.
It's like the best bacon in the world. It's actually like $2.59.
In the world, Michelle?
Well, it's one of the best bacons in the world. It has a snap to it that a lot of other bacons don't. It is 100% dry cured. It is not brined.
No.
And it even when it fries up really, really crisp, it's not very dark. So first it's like, wow, this looks weird. But you put it in your mouth, and it has a snap where your mouth, it shatters and fills your mouth with all these little bacon-flavored stars.
Is it better than your bacon? Because I know you were experimenting with making bacon.
Actually, well, I thought it was better than my bacon. Mm-hmm. Gina and Andy Lucas's daddy, Gina and Andy thought my bacon was better. But I preferred the Virginia bacon, so there you go. And now we've got it. You know, time flies with you, Steve.
Oh, wait.
Time flies. We're coming up on all of the details now.
All right.
So first of all, we should tell people that the Good Food Hour is on KSRO 1350 AM every Saturday from 11 to 12. It is preceded by two fabulous hours for anyone who's interested in gardening. 8 to 10, you've been doing the gardening show for probably as long as you've been doing this.
9 to 11.
9 to 11, yeah. Yes, the 2 hours before, right. 9 to 11. So now, if you would like to enter the peanut and peanut butter cooking contest, you still have time if you hurry.
Here's what you do. The easiest way is to just email me your best creative original peanut or peanut butter recipes, steve@ksro.com.
How hard is that?
That's steve@ksro.com.
Any requirements for how it is written?
No, certainly we like typed, but we get handwritten recipes.
Well, it's kind of hard to handwrite an email, so I'm betting most of them are coming through printed if they're email. You can handwrite it, scan it,
yeah, I guess
and
you
then
could.
Do it as an attachment.
But it'd be easier to fax them, and you can fax them to me also at 571-1097. It's too late to mail them. I doubt whether you could get
Let's
it there
the
by Wednesday.
Let's do the fax number again.
571-1097.
571-1097. Or you can drop it by
1410 Neotomas Avenue. And for reference, it's right across from Johnny Garlic's restaurant off of Farmer's Lane, right next to the AAA building. And we're open from 8:30 to 5:30, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. People can drop by the recipe. And believe me, at 5 o'clock, people are bringing in recipes.
That's great. Well, hopefully you'll get some from some mouthful listeners.
Well, I hope so.
And on that note, it's a tradition for 13 years almost, or 12 years, you've been giving me advice. We've got just a minute or one or two minutes. Do you have any advice as I enter my 13 years of volunteering as a host and producer for Mouthful?
Travel more.
Travel more?
This year, you must travel.
Really?
Yes.
Where should I go?
That hasn't come to me, but as I was driving here, I thought, what advice could I give Michelle? Because I'm planning on traveling a lot this coming year, because I think sometimes we just get a little stale in our viewpoints.
Am I stale?
No, me. I'm saying, I'm giving myself advice, and you're overhearing my advice to you. Mm-hmm. I have not been able to travel much this past year, and there's so much going on in the world in food that sometimes we just look in our own little corner. Of course, Sonoma County has it all, and sometimes I find myself not looking beyond my own little comfort level. So I think a great trip is in store for you in the coming year.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you so much. Congratulations on a long-running, very successful show. And thank you for continuing to be my mentor.
And congratulations, Michelle. This is quite an accomplishment.
Thanks so much. And on that note, we are out of here. I'm taking next week off, but we will still have something yummy for you because it is Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour on KRCB. Coming up next, Outbeat Salon. And hey, since I don't get to say this next week, vote. Vote. And vote right. Don't be dumb. Vote and vote correctly.
Mouthful on KRCB comes from KRCB radio members and from the Sebastopol Farmers Market, now open in the downtown Sebastopol Plaza every Sunday from 10 to 1:30 with organic, sustainable, locally produced fruits, vegetables, meats, and cheeses, plus breakfast, lunch, and local musicians. Support also comes from Peter Lowell's Cafe in Sebastopol, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the rustic Italian tradition, featuring seasonally sourced organic produce. Serving brunch Saturday and Sunday, Peter Lowell's Cafe online at peterlowells.com. Support also comes from NetBooks, complete business management software for companies up to 50 people, including wineries and food producers. Information available at netbooks.com or by phone at 86NETBOOKS. Support also comes from Barn Diva Restaurant, Lounge, and Dining Gardens in Healdsburg, committed to a sustainable and locally sourced menu. Fine food and drinks, brunch on Sunday, or special events for 200. Barn Diva reservations and menu online at barndiva.com.
It's time for dinner now, let's go.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.